This is Marathon Training Academy, episode 90.
Welcome to the Marathon Training Academy podcast. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Angie.
In this episode, we recap the 2013 Air Force Marathon in Dayton, Ohio. Plus, we talk about how to reduce your stress on race day. And for this episode's quick tip, Angie recommends a fueling product for sustained natural energy without sugar spikes and crashes. And if you'd like to own the first 50 episodes of the MTA podcast, visit our website, marathontrainingacademy.com, and click on the recommended resources page. So, Angie, we got back from Dayton, and you were sick for a couple days. What happened to you?
Yeah, it was more than a couple days, actually. I don't know if it was a little bit of post-marathon food revelry that got the best of me, or actually 2 days before the marathon, I told you I have like the sore throat coming on,
right?
And I'd been fighting it off, so obviously post-marathon with my immune system depressed a little bit, it caught up with me, and I had a horrific head cold. In fact, that's one of the reasons that we've waited a few days to do this recap, because
you haven't sounded too
like
yourself.
Yeah, my voice was almost gone for a couple of days, and I was hacking constantly, and you know, it really makes me thankful that I don't get sick very frequently, because man, it was awful. I would not make a good patient.
So has it kind of thrown your running off a little bit this last week?
Well, considering that I usually take a few days easy after a marathon, not really. I've done a couple days of yoga and done a couple of runs, so obviously not setting any speed records, but you know, just taking it easy and enjoying life.
So we had a great time in Dayton, Ohio at the Air Force Marathon. We're going to talk all about that today. As far as future marathons for us, we are going to be at the Rocket City Marathon in Huntsville, Alabama in December, but we don't have anything planned for, as at this point, nothing is planned for October or November.
Or next year. We're really pathetic.
Yeah, although we are looking at making a long drive out to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, doing the Myrtle Beach Marathon in February.
Yes, I looked on the calendar and found that it corresponded perfectly to some days off our kids had at school.
Yeah.
Like, yes, we are doing this.
So at the Race Expo for the Air Force Marathon, we got to meet Emily and Carrie and Steve, who was able just to stop by briefly, and he gave us a small gift. It was an Air Force coffee mug.
So, which has already been put to use.
Yes. So,
thank you, Steve.
Yeah, thank you for that. And also Daniel and Rebecca and Nathaniel.
Yeah, we also had Kathy, who was an MTA member, who was doing the marathon, but she couldn't make it to the expo in time, so we regretfully didn't get to meet her. But she was able to finish the marathon despite having an Achilles injury, so very proud of her.
So after meeting with these folks and running the marathon and getting back home, we got a few emails from them that we want to read. So Angie, why don't you go ahead and do that?
All right, this first one comes from Emily. And a little background on this one. She and her husband are both marathoners, and so they trade off marathon seasons. Like, she'll run a spring marathon, he'll run a fall.
Yeah.
Well, when she found out that we were running this marathon in the fall, for Mother's Day, he graciously gave up his fall marathon so that she could run it.
What a gentleman.
I know. So, anyway, that's kind of the backstory to this one. She says, "Hi, Angie and Trevor. I hope you enjoyed your race in Dayton today. I had an absolutely wonderful race. It was pure magic from start to finish. It was so nice to see Angie in Fairborn, and I hope you finish strong. I love the course, the crowd support, and the quiet areas as well. I was lucky enough to find a running partner around mile 11, and we ran shoulder to shoulder to the finish line. It was a great experience all around. I ended up finishing in 4 hours and 20 minutes. I was thrilled. Thank you for your awesome training plan. I was so prepared, and the final 6 miles were just as fresh as the first 6. I released the Kraken, ate hills like candy, and embraced the suck. It was so great to meet you. Thanks for taking the time for the meetup. I'm looking forward to hearing the race recap. Take care, Emily." And she says, "P.S. I'm now at the Drury Hotel enjoying their free Wi-Fi, popcorn, and pop. I feel like a queen here. Thanks for the recommendation."
Well, thank you for that nice email, Emily, and it was great to meet you. Congratulations on that awesome finishing time. I'm glad you got to release the Kraken and eat heels like candy and other things. Those are all little sayings that have been on our one podcast or another in the past. I can't even remember when those things were first said.
Right.
But
she's been a long-time listener, obviously.
Yeah, back in the first 50 episodes, I suppose. And she also mentioned staying at the Drury Hotel, which we were able to do there in Dayton. They had a very nice location. And the Drury Hotel Company is our official hotel sponsor for this podcast. They've got about 20 states that they are in throughout the South and Midwest. So if you are traveling or going to be going to one of these races, check out the Drury Hotel. And if you go through our link from our website, you could save $10 off your room. It's a secret that we'll let you in on.
Yeah, we love staying at the Drury. In fact, if we can't stay at a Drury, our kids are disappointed. They're like, we don't get popcorn, we don't get to swim. They have a lot of favorites. And the rooms have always been above and beyond your highest standards, too. So it's a great place. The second email comes from Carrie. She says, Angie, it was great to meet you and Trevor last weekend at the expo in Dayton. This was my first full marathon and happened to be your 20th marathon. I actually signed up for this race last year, and as soon as I signed up, I found out I was pregnant. After my daughter was born, I emailed you and received a shout out on your podcast where I told you I planned to go from mom to marathoner. Now, 331 days after giving birth, I have just completed that goal. Mom to marathon is like a couch to 5K, but 8.5 times longer. It is perseverance times insanity times awesome. It's running with my kids when I didn't have a babysitter and pushing my baby in a stroller so I could keep training. This has been an amazing experience and was extra special to me that you and Trevor were there at this marathon too. Thank you for inspiring me to do this. And thank you, Trevor, for telling me on every podcast that I have what it takes. Your podcast has truly been a blessing to me and has taught me so much, which allowed me not only to complete my first marathon within a year of giving birth, but to run the whole thing without stopping and without bonking, and to finish faster than I thought I could. I also completed my first marathon in front of my pace team, and at 4 hours and 28 minutes, I also beat Trevor's infamous first marathon time. Thanks, Angie, and keep up the great podcast.
Well, good job, Carrie. That is a great testimony of going from pregnancy, becoming a mother, to training, putting in the hard miles, and doing the hard work necessary, and running your first marathon and doing it in a good time. I mean, yeah, you did beat my first marathon time. I'm a little bit sore about that. But I didn't overcome pregnancy or anything.
He overcame the desire to lock himself in a porta potty.
Yeah, those first marathons are very memorable, you know?
Yes, they are.
Yeah, she mentioned that you had run 20, this was your 20th marathon.
That is right.
Which, for some of you, that seems like a lot of marathons. But we have met people who have done over 100.
Over 1,000.
You met somebody who has done over 1,000?
Yes.
Who?
I don't remember his name, but it was a marathon maniac at a race one time.
That is crazy.
Yeah, so I feel like small potatoes in the grand scheme of things. But, you know, whether it's your first marathon, your 200th, still an awesome experience every time.
That is true.
And Carrie had a little quick tip, too. She said she was experiencing some chafing during the race, and she got to an aid station, and they were handing out something on a stick. And she thought it was like a gel, a quick way to take a gel. So she popped it in her mouth and realized it was Vaseline. So she wants everyone to realize that the stuff on the stick is for any chafing you have, and gel always comes in a pack. That was a good quick tip.
It'd be a strange way to take a gel, wouldn't it?
Yes.
You know, here's the conversation happening at the aid station. Okay, everybody open up the gels and squirt them on these popsicle sticks for the runners. They like that. They really like to lick sticks.
Well, hey, sometimes if, you know, when you're running, it's hard to open those gel packs. You know, if your fingers are cold or even sweaty and they...
Maybe there's a good idea here in putting gels on popsicle sticks for people.
How about gel in a spoon?
Yeah. I don't know if I trust people enough.
Yeah, it seems like a contaminant risk.
We ran in Tupelo. I don't know if you saw this, but at one water station, they were dipping it out of a trash can.
Seriously?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was obviously a new and clean trash can, but it was like a huge trash can bucket. They were just dipping the water out of it and handing it to you. You didn't see that?
Wow, I'm glad I didn't see that.
I was hoping that it was a new one. But even so, like, how do you guarantee that's clean? There's no lid on it.
Nope, any flies could be in there taking baths.
Anyway, let's get off of that.
Okay, the last note I got here was from a lady that introduced herself during the marathon to me. Her and her husband are longtime listeners of the podcast, and her name is Laura, and so she posted on her Facebook page. She said, totally starstruck that I got to meet both of you at the Air Force Marathon. It's crazy that we have listened to you for a long time and finally got to see you doing what you love. I'm glad that you had your yellow shirt on. You both inspire me. Running with you was part of the reason this was such a cool marathon. Keep making the podcast. It's awesome.
Yeah, so that was great to be able to meet Laura and Nate.
And she was running her 15th marathon.
Yeah, so what was the deal? You were just on the course and she recognized you or what?
Yeah, she said, "Are you Angie?" And it said Angie in my bib, so I couldn't deny it. No, anyway, we struck up a really nice conversation and visited for a few minutes. And then we kind of split up. And then later on, we ran into each other again on the hill and visited some more. And then we saw her again at the finishing line and got to meet her husband and family. So it was awesome.
One of the things I'm getting to enjoy most about these races is meeting up with people. This is really cool.
It is, definitely.
It's fun. It's like a new social dimension to it. Did we mention on the last episode that you have social anxiety?
I think so, yes. I heard from some supportive people who recommended some books. There are a lot of introverts out there who pretend to be extroverts just to appear normal, I think. So I'm not alone.
You're getting better at it.
Yeah. I only had like one drop of sweat running down my back this time.
All right, some news from the Academy. We want to say congrats to John for finishing the Sydney Marathon and setting a PR of 3 hours and 27 minutes. That is really fast.
Definitely.
I want to say congrats to Katine for finishing the Sydney Marathon as well. Also, I want to congratulate Noelle, who ran her first 20-miler. I remember what my first 20-miler was like. That's epic, you know, when you run 20 miles for the first time. Congrats to Christy from North Dakota, who got accepted into the Boston Marathon.
Yay!
That's exciting. And also like to congratulate Johari, a member of the Academy, who set a PR in the 10K distance after coming back from a heel injury. So there's probably some other folks who have run a marathon recently, but that is the roundup that I was able to get together. So
they're awesome.
That's right. All right, now we'd like to tell you about the Air Force Marathon in Dayton, Ohio. We had a wonderful weekend. Took the whole family over there with the kids and Angie's mom, who we're so glad is able to travel with us and watch the kids and really enjoys traveling with us. So we went to Dayton. It's about 7 hours from where we live here in Southeast Missouri. We tried to make it fun for the kids and make it into sort of a learning trip. And we went to the Air Force Museum, which is a huge museum. I mean, there's more planes in there than you would have time to even look at in a day.
Yeah, it pretty much covered the whole history of aviation.
Yes.
From the Wright brothers all the way to the space program. And very well done. They had the actual planes in there. And our 2-year-old son wanted his picture taken with every single plane. It was really cute.
Yeah.
Take a picture with this one.
I know, yeah. And if you want to see some pictures of our trip, you can check out this blog post where we talk about the recap and some links that we share along with this episode will be available over there. Well, and also what was really convenient is that the Air Force Museum is pretty much where the race started. So we were able to do two things at once, see the museum and also scope out the race day stuff, you know, where the race was going to start, where parking was going to be. Actually, we didn't really have a good idea where we were going to park at. That was sort of a mystery that we didn't figure out until that morning. But to be able to get from the hotel to the Air Force Museum the day before was really handy, just to sort of get that figured out. The Air Force Marathon was in its 17th year, so this was the 17th running of it. And from what I've read, it sold out at 15,000 runners, so a big race. And I think you found this number that there were 3,127 people who did the full marathon, and 5,275 who did the half, and 1,500 10Kers.
Which doesn't add up to 15,000.
That doesn't. I've just
seen
that.
So the rest of them did the 5K, which was held the day before.
And I also saw that there were somewhere they had written there were 2,500 deployed military members who were participating virtually. I don't know what length of race they were running virtually, but that's pretty cool.
Definitely.
So apparently every year they feature a different aircraft. Last year's was the B-2. This year was the C-130J Super Hercules, which I don't even know how I would describe it, like what it looks like. I guess I'm not very much of a military buff.
Isn't it a big cargo-type plane?
Yeah, I guess so.
Military cargo aircraft?
I apologize, folks, for my ignorance, even though I spent all day in the the museum.
They all kind of started to run together in your mind after a while.
It's just amazing that such huge pieces of metal can become airborne.
Stay airborne.
Yeah, and stay airborne, yeah. It's just a marvel. But anyway, this race also had 2,000 volunteers. We'd like to thank all the volunteers for making this event possible. With 15,000 runners, it takes a lot of organization, but that's kind of what the military is known for, isn't it?
Definitely.
So let's talk about the Race Expo. Angie, you've been to a lot of Race Expos. How'd you feel about this one?
I like the fact that it was held at a place that had really good parking.
Yeah.
It was held at the Wright State University Nutter Center, and I thought it was really well organized. They had basically all the expo booths and vendors set up along the outside of this hallway, and they kind of made you walk all the way around past all the booths, and then you would go down the stairs into the convention center to the floor of the stadium.
Yeah, like down bleacher steps.
Right. So you could get your packet, your t-shirt, and a few other things down there. And, you know, I've been to some expos. It's just all on the floor. You're, like, wandering around in this maze. Mm-hmm. You feel like a rat in a cage. You can't figure out where to go for your packet. And you go by the same stuff, like, six times. And, you know, it's just a jumble of people. So I thought this one was well organized. And it seemed like they had a wide variety of different vendors. And
yeah, there was a good vibe there, you know? They had free Starbucks coffee.
Yeah, beat that.
I know. I was actually going to stop and get one before we went, but we didn't have time. I'm like, oh, forget it. Glad I didn't stop, because they had it there for free.
That's right.
I'm going back next year.
Just for the coffee, huh?
No, probably not. After going to a lot of these expos, do you start recognizing, like, the same vendors who show up at a lot of these races?
Not the individual people that are manning the booths, necessarily.
The same little companies.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, other than, like, the big shoe companies, there's, like, little t-shirt companies and sticker companies that are there.
Right. Yeah, there's definitely ones that show up at multiple events.
I always feel bad for the vendors that there's like one person behind a table and no one's stopping to look at the stuff. And if
you don't really want to make eye contact with them.
Yeah, it's really awkward. It's just a person sitting behind a table with some pamphlets on the table or, you know, a product that they're trying to sell. That, and then they got to start calling people as they walk by. Hey, check this out. Have you ever seen headphones like these?
Let me just say that would be my nightmare job. Like any kind of sales position, cold calling, sitting behind a booth, I'm not there.
And in other booths, it just sort of draws you in. Like it's fun to interact with it or to look at what they have. It's just a beehive of activity there and sales are being made. And what's the difference? I guess it's what they're selling and how they're selling it.
Yeah, but if you have a booth, have medals there. Even if, you know, it has nothing to do with your booth, because runners are drawn to bling. It's like, oh, let's go look at those medals.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good idea. That's probably 90% of the time we stopped. That's why we stopped.
So look at the medal.
What does that say about us? We are just...
We're like rats who collect shiny things.
Yeah, shiny things.
So I thought it was well organized, getting your shirt, your packet. The race swag was nice. It was a long sleeve tech shirt. You know, gender-specific cut. There was also a hat.
That was nice.
So, yeah, I thought it was really decent.
We stopped by the Disney World Marathon booth and looked at their medals. See, they know how to draw people in, right? And so I asked the lady, it's like, what would it cost us to go down there as a family, six people, and do the marathon weekend, the dopey challenge, or goofy challenge, that's what it is, isn't it?
They have both.
Do the goofy challenge, half marathon one day, full marathon the next, and go through the park, stay at the hotels, eat, all that. She's like, family your size, about between 5 and 7. And then your mom says, 5 and 7 what? And the lady says, 1,000. And then just see the look in your mom's face like, what?
Which is why our family never went to Disney World.
Yeah, that's a chunk of change to go down there and do that.
But obviously, people are willing to spend it because the race always sells out early.
Yeah, I suppose that you could do the race without having to sign up for all the other stuff. But for us, to go all the way down there with our kids, we'd have to go in the park.
That'd be like the cruelest torture, is go do the marathon and not take the kids to the park, can you imagine?
Just leave them in the hotel watching TV the whole time.
We're not that mean. What?
Here's some Disney movies you guys can watch. You know, we'll have to start saving our money. Like, that could be, like, a big goal that we could start budgeting for. Get the kids in on it, you know. They could start saving their pennies.
Having a lemonade stand.
It is fun, the metal shop, though.
Yes, it is.
While we were at the Race Expo, they had some celebrity runners there speaking. Jeff Galloway was one. He was an Olympian who ran with Steve Prefontaine way back in the day. He's also, like, an author. I think he's written, like, 20-some books.
He's the famous advocate of the run-walk program.
Run-walk program, which we don't know very much about because we just run.
Speak for yourself.
So,
I'm a running coach. I know about all things.
Yeah. Angie knows about it. I don't. So we decided that we wanted to buy one of his books and have him sign it. Because what an opportunity, you know, to have an author sign the book. Even if you don't want the book, it's just still worth it. So we went down there and started.
Well, first you ask me, do you have any money? I'm like, maybe $5.
Cash money. Yeah.
As opposed to Monopoly money?
So you said, yeah, I got $5. I had $5 or $7 in my wallet. So I thought, that should be enough. So we went down there. You didn't tell me you only had five. You had around five. You had a little more, right?
Seven.
Okay. Jeff Galloway's people were just putting away his stuff. And I said, hey, is it too late to get a book? And they're like, no. And they started unpacking the boxes and showing us what they have.
We spent 5 minutes deciding what book we want, basically, before you asked how much they were.
Yeah, so we asked, they were $20 a piece. We began to collect all the dollars that we had between us. And we had $17. We're $3 short. But hey, this is the last sale of the day. They're putting away the stuff. I mean, who wouldn't jump at the opportunity to make one final sale, even if it was $3 less, you know, from sticker price? So I said, hey, will you take $17 for it? You know, it's an expo. You're supposed to barter. It's kind of like going to flea market, isn't it?
At this point, I'm inching away, pretending not to know him.
It's Angie's social anxiety coming out here.
My general fear of embarrassment.
People that we don't even know or won't even meet again, probably. So this is not Jeff Galloway we're dealing with. It's his people. They're nice people. And I said, yeah, will you take $17? They're like, no, we can't do that. So we had to put the book down and back away slowly.
Well, first, we asked, do you take credit cards? Well, yeah, but we put our machine away. Well, we can write your credit card number down on, oh, you have any paper? No, do you have paper? They found this slip of scratch paper they're going to write our credit card number down on. And I was like, I don't think so.
Yeah, I could see that getting left on the floor of the expo when it's time to pack up and go. You know, the next event, somebody finds a scrap of paper with our credit card number on it. Anyway, so yeah, we just missed out on that opportunity of getting a book and having Jeff Galloway sign it. But if I was those people, I would have just sold me the book for $17. I'm sure they're still making profit. I mean, what do they print the books for $18 and sell them for $20 and they only have a $2 profit margin? So we just thought we'd share that embarrassing incident. Probably most of you listening to this won't even find that embarrassing. Angie, you need to go with me down to Mexico and we'll show you how to really wheel and deal down there.
I think I'm going to find some different friends.
Friends who have money?
Friends who have money and don't do embarrassing things like that.
Yeah, I sort of cramp Angie's style, her collected, calm, poised style.
He does things like pretend to trip over the, what was it?
The power strip running through the middle of the place. So we did mention our meetup that we had there, and there's a picture of all the runners that we got to meet with and that came together. If you want to see that, it's on our website. After the expo, we got back to our hotel room, and how did you sleep the night before?
All was going well until someone started thrashing about in bed next to me.
The night before the race, about 2 a.m., I had this killer headache. I had a migraine headache, and it started affecting my dreams. So for some reason, in my head, as I was trying to shake off this migraine and get comfortable, I kept thinking, I need to have iron. I have a headache because of a lack of iron. I don't know why I thought that.
And you thought, I need some bread.
Yeah, I started thinking about the bread that we had brought for the kids, because you and I are not eating a lot of grains right now, so we're pretty much not eating any bread, but the kids are still eating bread, and we had this bread sitting over there near the cooler. I thought, I need to get up and eat some of that bread to get some iron, because I'm sure it said enriched with iron on the package of the bread, and that's why I thought I need to eat it. I don't know why. And then I started thinking about how I could get up and go down to the front desk, have a little commissary there, and buy some headache medicine without waking you guys up in the process. Well, finally, you woke up at 2 in the morning, and I said, I got this killer migraine. You gave me some Tylenol, and it knocked it out, and I finally got some good sleep. But we still had to get up pretty early to make it to where the race was going to begin and endure some strenuous parking maneuvers.
Well, after you went back to sleep, then the rest of my sleep was distorted by these horrible dreams.
Like, you had bad dreams too?
Yeah, I dreamed that, for one thing, that your headache was so bad that you couldn't do the race, so then I had to like drive myself there at the last minute. And then I dreamed that I forgot my fuel and something else, I don't remember now, but I was like a sobbing mess by the time I got to the starting line.
It felt like a dream when we got to where all the parking was, and there were cars lined up as far as the eye can see, like one lane traffic.
Well, for like 3 miles before we got to the place.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, what, is every person got to be strip searched before they go into the military base to park? And no, they weren't stopping people. They were just all funneling people through three gates that go into the base, and you have to go one car at a time. So there's thousands of runners who are all trying to drive and get there at the same time. And
it was raining and wet and soggy.
We had to park out on the grass. There's this huge runway and big grass fields on either side of it. That's where the parking was. And since it was raining so bad, it was creating a sort of a muddy disaster. And when we got close enough, a parking guy asked us, do you guys have four-wheel drive? If you have four-wheel drive, you can go that way. So we got to turn on the four-wheel drive and kind of go mudding a little bit. So what would be your tip for people if they ever go to this race as far as getting there in the morning?
When they say the gates open at 5 a.m., there's a reason they open at 5 a.m. Because you're going to be in line for an hour waiting to park. So, yeah, the parking at the beginning of the race, I was not sure we were going to make it in time. In fact, when we got parked, I pretty much had to hop out and hoof it to the starting line. Trevor was only doing the half marathon, and his race started an hour later.
Yeah.
So I was a little bit concerned, but I did have time to go use the porta-pots and then get in line. But it was pretty close.
So here's the rule we would say. The parking at the Air Force Marathon is difficult. Whenever you're planning to leave, add an hour on both ends. An hour to get in there and an hour to get out. Because getting out of there was hard, too.
It was, yeah. It was by far the most difficult part of the race.
It was probably the toughest parking that we've ever had to do. It probably took us the longest to park at this marathon than any other race we've done. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, definitely. Well, they did offer a shuttle bus from the Nutter Center. So you could park at the Nutter Center and it would shuttle you to the start.
Right.
But then you had to have someone come pick you up after the race because they didn't offer a return shuttle.
Yeah, it was a one-way shuttle. But we don't know how that was. That could have been like standing in line for hours too. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
We got to the starting line. I went with you as far as I felt like I could go, and then I went back to the car because my race started an hour after yours. But get this. By the time my race was about to start, I was in line to use a porta potty. I had about, I don't know, 7 minutes before the official start of the half marathon. While I'm in line, this guy runs up and he says, hey, I'll pay somebody $5 if you'll let me cut in line, please. We are here late. We were supposed to be running the marathon. These people were an hour late. So we let him cut in front, you know, for free. And they skedaddled and got to the... But man, think about that. An hour late to the marathon.
I've had nightmares about that before.
But one thing, while we're on the subject of porta-potties, they had thousands of them, didn't they?
Yeah, they were well prepared in that. Which was funny. Our last race in Tupelo was like, you know, there's like six total. So it had like 600, it seemed like.
Yeah. Well, Tupelo was a lot smaller race. So I wasn't there when the marathon started, because I only ran the half. So what was it like?
I wouldn't say there was a lot of organization. I was kind of surprised there wasn't any really race corrals. Everyone just kind of milled around.
Yeah.
And the 10K started at the same time that the marathon did as well. So, you know, there was pace groups, so you kind of just adjusted yourself according to where they were standing for your time. So I would say if you were wanting to get a PR, make sure that you get in the front.
Right.
Because otherwise you might get stuck behind traffic. And then the commander of the base gave a nice speech, and then the national anthem was sung, and then we were off. And
they sing the Air Force theme song?
No, actually, they didn't.
Huh, we did that at the half. And some years they have a flyover, but they couldn't this year because of weather.
I thought it was the military cutbacks, government military cutbacks.
No, he said because of the weather.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But interestingly, huge flocks of Canadian geese kept flying over. So the commander, the base commander, when he was talking, said, well, folks, we weren't able to get an aircraft fly over, but we've got these geese to fly over instead. So that was pretty cool. So tell us about the course, Angie. What did you think of the course of this race?
The course was fairly challenging. The first 2 or 3 miles, there was quite a few hills. So you pretty much started right away going up a few hills. And it did level out in the middle miles. But there was some sections where there weren't really any spectators. It was pretty quiet, especially when you got on the military base. You're running alongside the flight line. And then there were some spots where it was a little bit wooded and, you know, very scenic. The aid stations were all very, very well organized and supported. And, you know, the people were enthusiastic there. So and they kind of seemed like they had a contest going with the aid stations. There were some that were dressed up. There was one that was all about aliens.
Wow.
And another one was Despicable Me.
I remember that one.
That was pretty cool. So, yeah, the course for the half marathoners and the full marathoners wasn't exactly the same.
No.
But, you know, there wasn't a lot of music along the course. There was one heavy metal band.
Yeah.
And then, you know, sometimes spectators would have their own personal car radio or radio going. However, the town of Fairborn is around mile 9 or so in the race. They really make it a big event, and you know, a lot of the town comes out, very exciting, and you kind of run up the main street and then back down it. And so that was pretty exciting, a lot of support there, and you know, some really cool houses decorated for Halloween, like life-size headless horsemen. And
I didn't get to see any of that.
Yeah, it was a pretty cool. They should have run the half marathoners by there, I thought.
Now, Angie and I are a bit confused about the course, just to let you folks know that we don't really know when we were on the base or when we were off. And we've looked at some maps, and I don't know, we still can't figure it out. But I am under the impression that we were on the base most of the time. Going through Fairborn, that section was not. But we ran by a golf course and, you know, runways and even neighborhoods. So it's a beautiful course, and it's well-supported, and I think most of it is on the base, but whether it's on or off, no man knoweth.
Well, somebody does. People smarter than we are.
In the first 2 miles, did you guys run by a ditch, kind of like through a park, and then there was this creek? I shouldn't say ditch. It's like this creek to the right.
Maybe.
It's all a blur.
I have post-marathon amnesia.
When we were running by that creek, there was this Air Force guy who looked over, and he saw a Marine, I guess. He could tell by just looking at him. He says, I thought you Marines would be running in the creek. And the Marine answers back immediately. He doesn't even have to think about it. Just says, yeah, I didn't want to make you Air Force guys look bad.
There were a lot of military members that were running the race.
Yes.
There was actually an interbase competition where different teams from other Air Force bases would come. And I believe they kind of have a friendly rivalry going as far as who has the fastest marathon times.
I think an Air Force guy won the half marathon.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, that's cool. Okay, a couple other things I saw on the course is there was one section where marathoners were coming back on the other side of the road, and there was sort of like this fence between us. One guy was running and juggling 5 balls in the air.
That is amazing.
Yeah, and then there's 2 guys behind him that I overheard, and one guy said to the other, "We're being beat by a guy who's juggling."
A little bit demoralizing.
That was
huh?
Classic.
What about the guy who was high-fiving everyone?
Oh, that guy was so annoying. So yeah, that was on
my... Unless you're listening, then you're not annoying.
Oh yeah, then we love you. But if this guy was on the half marathon course and running around the same pace as me, and he was high-fiving every volunteer, so he would weave back and forth from side to side of the road, just any spectator or volunteer that he saw. He would run like halfway across the grass park, you know, to high-five somebody. And
Sounds like a lot of extra energy.
I was trying to...
I like high-fiving people, especially kids who have their hands out.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't go out of my way necessarily to do that.
He was going way out of his way to high-five every living soul, even people that were running around him. So I was trying to get ahead of him so I could get away from him. And, yeah, high-five guy. He's out there. Watch out for him.
I enjoyed later in the race. I like to gain inspiration from people who are running around me. And if, you know, if you're running a race and you're not trying to get a PR, talk to the people around you. You really hear some interesting stories. People have funny sayings on their shirts, and there's usually a story behind it. People are running in honor or memory of someone. And one lady I came up behind had a picture of a serviceman on the back of her shirt. And so I just asked her, I'm like, how do you know the man on your shirt? And she said, oh, he was my little brother and he was killed a year ago.
Yeah.
So her name was Michelle, and she was running in memory of her brother, Staff Sergeant Michael Deal. And so I thought that was really neat. She talked about how her training had been really therapeutic, how she was able to go through the healing process, and just really felt that her brother would be proud of her taking on this experience. And, you know, she just looked really strong, and so I tried to encourage her. And so that was, you know, that was a neat experience. So no matter how much you're hurting, there's somebody who's going to be hurting more. Mm-hmm. And if you can focus on that, it really makes your own discomfort a lot less.
I'm glad you got to talk to her. I don't think I talked to anybody the whole time I was running. I was just stuck in my own little zone.
Well, so. You were probably running faster than I was. But I don't know. I just like to talk to different maniacs along the course and hear how many marathons they've done. And one good icebreaker is if you're running and sometimes there's an awkward moment, you kind of catch up to someone and you're keeping pace with them.
Yeah.
But do you like ignore them or just, you know, say hi? So sometimes I just like to say, so have you done this race before?
Mm-hmm.
And they'll say, no, it's my first time. You know, it kind of just opens up. Or they'll say, yeah. And then you can ask them about the course or, you know, how many marathons have you done? What's your favorite marathon? Where are you from? You know, there's just a whole host of questions, and it can be a great way to just meet people and
yes,
take your mind off yourself.
That's good advice. You also got to see, not talk to, but see Jeff Galloway running, didn't you?
Yes, and I had heard prior to this that he was doing a run-walk interval, you know, following his own method, apparently running 30 seconds and walking 15 seconds, and he was going to try to qualify for Boston. Now, he's, you know, a little bit up there in years, so I just thought it was very intriguing, and I heard this beeping sound behind me, and, you know, obviously recognized him. He's tall, thin, and faster than me, even run walking.
Really?
But, you know, he would just run pretty fast for 30 seconds, and then he would slow down to a walk for 15 seconds, and then he would accelerate again, and I just thought, wow, that's very interesting, because it just seemed like he was putting on the brakes a lot and then having to resurge again.
Seems like interrupting your momentum.
Yeah, you know, I can see for a longer walk interval, it might not be as much of an interruption, but apparently it works for him. I guess, unfortunately, though, he missed qualifying by like 38 seconds or something pretty close.
Yeah.
So I think if it had been me, I would have forgotten the run-walk intervals in the end and like sprinted it out, but I know how that is, missing it by a very little bit.
Yes.
So that was interesting to see him on the course and, you know, to see what he does in practice. So it's really cool when you come up to the finishing line area and they have you run right under the wings of several parked aircraft there. So it's just really this neat finishing line experience and a lot of spectators around there.
It is cool.
And it was pretty neat. And I thought it was pretty well organized, too. They kind of had you funneled into the half marathoners to one side and full marathoners to get your medal. And a service member put it around your neck and shook your hand and said congratulations. Trevor, you finished in what?
I finished my half marathon in 1 hour, 48 minutes, and 49 seconds. So not the fastest half that I've run, but I did put a lot of effort into it. I wanted to get in under an hour and 50, which I was able to do. And there's some hills in that.
Yeah, course. There was, definitely. It wasn't the flattest one available.
And what was your finishing time?
It was 4 hours, 14 minutes, and 26 seconds.
Good job.
Thank you.
That's a big improvement over Tupelo.
Yes, well, it's kind of right around what I've been running lately, but Tupelo was a rather slow anomaly.
So what did you think about the finishing line food?
I thought it was great. I thought they had a nice variety of sports drinks and chocolate milk and pretzels and popcorn and bagels and bananas.
Pizza.
And pizza. Hot, fresh pizza.
That was the tastiest pizza I'd ever eaten because I'd eaten it right after running a half marathon.
And because we haven't had pizza in weeks.
Yeah, that too. Because there's no sugars, no grains thing. It just all went out the window at the day of the marathon, you know?
Yeah, I pretty much jumped off the wagon too.
I went and sat down with my slice of pizza and some of my other food they gave me. There was a military band, Air Force people playing. They were pretty good, too. So I went and sat and listened to them under a tent. And a lady came and sat across from me who had like 3 slices of pizza. And I was just finishing my one. And I saw her 3, and I'm like, man, I need to go back and get some more. But I couldn't, because you couldn't re-enter the place where the food was. You could buy pizza at a different place, but I didn't have any money on me. I don't run with money on me, you know? Who does that?
Smart people. Yeah.
So I should have piled up extra pieces.
They were only giving out 1 piece per person when we were coming through. So don't be the greedy half marathoner who hogs all the food.
Yeah, that would have been a bad deal if the half marathoner slammed all the good food.
Which frequently happens.
It does. So after I got done, I had about an hour to kill before Angie finished. So I went back to the car, and I don't know what I did there. I took a nap.
Zoned out?
Oh, I know what I wanted. I wanted to get my phone and check in, see how the kids were doing. So then I walked back to the finishing line, and walking from the finishing area to the car, it's like almost a mile. I made that trip 6 times. So I got plenty of walking in. I was able to find you after you finished. Even though there's thousands of people there, I was able to find you. I was pretty happy with myself.
I was happy too, because we really hadn't made any specific arrangements. Like, no. Oh, we'll see you afterwards. Okay, bye.
So we got a few pictures together, and then we made our final trek back to our car, and then we
sat in the traffic for a long time.
We began the most difficult part of the Air Force Marathon, figuring out how to get out of there. Because we wanted to, we had a late checkout, like by 1 o'clock at our hotel, which is very generous. And so we had like less than 30 minutes. Maybe we had about 30 minutes to get back to the hotel and shower and get out of there. But it took us 45 minutes to even get out of the parking area. It was hard to figure out even where to go. So we drove across this field and got in this long line of cars. It took 45 minutes. We ended up having to call the hotel, and they were cool enough to give us a 2 o'clock checkout. That's what's cool about the Drury hotels is there, you know, they can be flexible like that. I think there was a lot of runners staying there, and a lot of them were in the same dilemma we were.
Probably so.
They needed a late checkout.
Yeah, it was kind of tense, just sitting there as time ticked away. Fortunately, I had something to occupy myself with, because my hair had turned into the biggest rat's nest you have ever seen. Like, I always wear my hair in a ponytail, and I don't know if it was the humidity or the wind or what, but it was like so snarled.
Yes.
I mean, it was like the worst. I mean, I felt like just cutting my ponytail off. But I picked through it for 45 minutes.
And there were not any rats in it.
Fortunately.
So the thing about it is, if you go to this race, just accept right now, if you park your own car and don't take the shuttle, that it's going to take a while to get out of there. Find some way to occupy your time.
Yes, or stay an extra night so you don't feel pressured to get back.
Which leads us to a little segment we want to do on this episode, how to decrease your stress on race day. The main way to decrease your stress is to not have me along, right, Angie?
Well, you are very good about navigating in cities and driving.
Yes.
You're like my personal driver.
Go on.
But as far as logistics are concerned.
Yeah, it is logistics.
Well, but as far as
getting up early.
As far as someone telling you what to do, as far as planning things, thinking things through.
What are you trying to say? Just say it.
That you're not much of a planner.
Well, the day we left to go to this race, I had a spreadsheet of everywhere we were going to go, the location, the phone number, the times. I had it all planned. Did I not?
I never saw the spreadsheet.
You didn't? I think you're just saying
I'll
that.
I'll take your word for it.
Okay. I think you're just saying that because I wanted to sleep in longer than you did. Right.
Right. And if we had slept in as long as you wanted to sleep in, I would have been the person an hour late for my marathon.
That's true. You do have good judgment when it comes to allowing enough time to get to a race.
Yes.
So our first tip is, if you're going to decrease your stress on race day, the day before the race, try to scope out the starting line, know how to get there, at least have a general idea. We did run through some road construction. Our GPS was off from the hotel to the
starting line.
It would have really thrown us off on race day if we hadn't have already went through that and were prepared for it the day before. So scope out everything the day before if you can. The second tip is, this is something Angie does, is study the course. Now, why is it important to study the course?
So you have a general sense of the elevation, any hills that you may be tackling. I like to even know when there's out and back sections, because sometimes those can be kind of demoralizing, like seeing all the fast people come back and you're still slogging along out there. And when we did the Screaming Pumpkin Marathon
last year,
there was kind of some twists and turns in it. I had read earlier that at every turn, always choose to go right.
Yeah, that saved us.
Because, yeah, we got to a turn and didn't know which way to go. And I remember that little tidbit. So, you know, read the frequently asked information, study the course a little bit. It doesn't take a lot of time. It's not like you have to, you know, take extensive notes or stress over it, but just kind of have a general sense of what's going on. Because I've known people who have just followed runners in front of them and gone totally off course,
right,
not knowing where the turnaround spots are, you know, whatever. It can kind of turn into a real snafu.
She's referring to a marathon that we did that went through a cemetery at night, and there wasn't a lot of support on the course. There wasn't any people to direct you where to go.
There wasn't just a lot of light either.
Yeah. Sometimes you had an option to go left or right. And if Angie hadn't read that one little piece of information, you know, always make a right turn, we would have been like wandering on this course in a freezing cold, you know, at night. So it does pay to study the course. The third tip that we would give you is lay your stuff out the day before to try to pin your bib to your shirt and get your fuel ready and all that stuff the morning of. Could be stressful. So.
Yeah, because, you know, if you're stumbling around in the dark, trying not to wake up your kids, you're half asleep, could be easy to forget something. So just kind of even have a bag packed of everything you're going to need, from the directions to get there to, you know, your road ID, your watch, everything you're going to need to take with you.
Yes. Okay, the next one would be to leave an hour and a half early the morning of the race.
Well, for some races even more so, you know, like the New York City Marathon, some of the big marathons. So let's just say leave early. You know, figure out what time you think you need to be there and then
add 30 minutes to it.
If you're Trevor.
Add an hour to it.
I'm the kind of person, if it says gates open at 5, I want to be there at 5. You know, Trevor thinks, oh, the race starts at 7:30. Let's get there at 7:25. So somewhere there's a happy medium, obviously.
Yeah, I'm always thinking about my sleep. Like, I want to get as many extra minutes sleep as I can. But usually, you know, a person doesn't sleep that well before a marathon anyway. So,
and if you're stressing about maybe not getting there on time,
right,
it's better just to get up earlier, then at least you'll have quality rather than quantity.
And the last tip would be to get a late checkout at your hotel. Well, thankfully, the hotel that we were staying at in Dayton, the Drury Hotel, allowed us to get a really late checkout. And probably all the runners there that day had to get a late checkout.
I would add a final tip is to prearrange a meetup place that you can find your family or friends after the race.
Yes.
Because we kind of left it like, we'll see you at the end, you know. And then there's kind of that general anxiety, like, what if I have to wander around for an hour searching every face in the crowd to, find my person to meet up with. So it's best to say, I'll meet you near the blank or in front of this. There's been a couple of races where I've wandered around for extensive periods of time looking for you.
Sometimes it's hard to know where we're going to meet at because we don't know what the finishing area looks like. So I think the deal was, if we didn't see each other, then we're going to meet at the car a mile away, right?
Well, that's why you study the finishing area and you decide on a prearranged spot, you know?
Yeah. Meet me at the beer garden. So after going to a lot of these races now, this is Angie's 20th marathon. These are some of the things we do to decrease our stress and, well, mainly Angie's stress. Because I don't get stressed out that often, but this is the things we do to decrease her stress.
If you're type A personality, this will help. If you're type B personality, this will actually get you there.
How many states have you run in now?
That was 16.
All right, so state 16 on her 50-state goal. She still has a ways to go, but making progress. Well, now it's time for this episode's quick tip, and we promised to tell you about a fueling source, unlike any other fueling source.
And we don't receive any benefits or compensation by saying this, but it's just something that I came across in my training that I've started using and wanted to share it with the audience. There might be some people who are looking for something new or unsure what they should do, and this may be a good solution for them.
All right, so what is the fuel you've been using? How has it worked for you? And tell us about it.
Well, it's called UCAN, and the product was first designed for kids with a rare metabolic disorder where their body's unable to break down certain carbohydrates, even glycogen. And these children have to be tube-fed like every 2 hours so they maintain normal blood sugar levels.
Wow.
And this can be very stressful, obviously, as a parent, worrying that your child is going to have a blood sugar crash. So they developed this complex carbohydrate called superstarch that provides a steady release of glucose into the system. It'll keep your energy levels steady for several hours. Later, they realized the implications for athletes, endurance athletes, and runners like elite marathoner Meb Keflezighi and athletes from other sports are using this product with really good success. Now, I had heard about it when I was making the transition to no sugar, no grain, and I was looking for a fueling source that didn't have the carbohydrates to spike up your blood sugar and have the big insulin release and then, you know, send them crashing down. And so I've used it for 2 marathons now, and it's basically a powder that you mix with water. It really has been pretty amazing. I wouldn't say that I had high expectations using it, just thinking, I actually brought some backup fuel for my first marathon, thinking if this doesn't work, because what I've been doing is using 1 scoop of this powder about 30 to 45 minutes before a race, drinking that down, and it only has around 120 calories.
Huh.
And then I mix up a multi-hour bottle of 2 scoops, kind of a, you know, gel-like consistency, and I sip on that during the race. So total fuel calories for the whole race would be like around 330.
Which would be kind of low.
Yeah, which would be like half my normal fueling level. But it's been really amazing that my energy levels have been steady, and, you know, I think it's a really a great product.
How does it taste?
You know, they have 3 different flavors, and I would say they're decent. It has kind of a strange texture to it. It's kind of a creamier texture to it. And I have to admit that pretty much if I use 1 flavor for an entire race, I'm getting sick of it by the end. But I don't get that kind of like gaggy, like before, around mile 16, I would get, my stomach would be so sick, I could not eat any fuel after that.
Mm-hmm.
And so with this, my stomach is not rejecting it. You know, maybe I'm a little tired of the flavor, but I'm still able to keep it down and not have any GI issues. So it's really been pretty good.
So even though you've been using UCAN, experimenting with it, you still use products from Hammer Nutrition, correct?
Yeah, I think Hammer's a great company, and I use a lot of their products still. But, you know, I was just kind of getting to the point where I'm trying to reduce sugars, and I was trying to solve this issue I was having with not being able to eat anything after mile 16. And if something doesn't work, try something else. So this seems to be working really well. I'm going to keep using it. And another really neat thing is that it keeps your blood sugar level so steady that you don't feel as starving after your long run or your race. They actually have a recovery drink as well that has some protein in it, and so they recommend that you use that after running. But yeah, so if you're interested in learning more about it, you can go to generationucan.com. It is a little pricier than your normal fuel, so I kind of had to gulp when I was ordering it.
Wow.
But you know, if something works, it's worth it to have a good marathon experience.
Well, thank you for telling us about that, Angie, giving us that tip and that link. That's GenerationUCAN, UCAN.com. We'll have a link to that over on our website, and you can check out the show notes to this page, look at the photos that we took from the Air Force Marathon, and leave a comment on our blog. We'd like to hear from you if you've ever run the marathon before, or if you'd like to tell us about your experience using UCAN. And when you're on our website, you can also sign up for our newsletter and download a free audio gift called The 7 Pillars of Successful Marathon Training. Thousands of people have gotten this audio and have listened to it, and we want to give it to you for free. We also like to thank you for being part of our podcasting audience. We want you to remember you do have what it takes to run a marathon and change your life.